Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world. Well, welcome back to the Center for Internet Security's podcast series, Cybersecurity Where You Are. As usual, we like to take on interesting people and interesting topics in the industry and try to bring a little light and a little bit of insight into what's going on out there. Special guest today, I'm joined by my old friend and colleague, Stan Stahl. Stan, we'll give you a little bit of his background, but he's one of the really good people in this industry, and I think his long distinguished career of service here, and is also another fellow who seems to figure out or is unable to figure out how to retire. So we share that in common. So Stan, welcome to the show, and please introduce yourself to our audience.
Sure. And Tony, thank you so much for having me on your show, or giving me the opportunity to talk about what we're doing and what prevents me from retiring, if you will. I got started in this field deeply into the mathematics of it, Gödel's theorem, for those who know of it, playing on the sentence, this sentence is false, and playing with that. I mean, that leads to Turing, that led to the University of Michigan, a PhD in recursion theory, blah, blah, blah. Teaching in a lot of colleges got me to 1980. At that point, I was teaching in what I like to call a third-rate college. But I really don't want to insult the true third-rate colleges. But it was enough. Okay, I got to go do something else with my life. And I found myself at Wire, 1980. What an opportunity. Because in some sense, we were at that point, what is information security all about? Computer security all about? How does one write a model that reflects what that needs to be? This was Bella Padula was there, but it didn't fit the particulars of what Jim Keaton Williams and I were doing. So, it's like right at the origins, you're there. Fast forward 10 years later, I'm out of aerospace. I'm a hippie from the 60s, and I was not a fit for any of that. And I got it in my brain. I wanted to be a consultant for small businesses. And I mean, I did not spell consultant, but that's what I went out to do, full extent. But it touched me. It connected to me. It gave me that sense of satisfaction. Hop forward 10 years later, they're beginning to get interested in computer cybersecurity. The internet was now around. Big businesses, big government was already doing that. And suddenly it became of importance to smaller businesses. A young woman, Kimberly Pease, and I started Citadel Information Group to help these small businesses with cybersecurity. Fast forward 20 years later, here we are.
Yeah, it's been by the way, you're the first PhD in recursion theory I've ever met, but I think that's But Stan, you were there at the roots. You have a couple of years on me, I suspect, but reading those papers when I started in the 70s, 1977 at the National Security Agency, they handed me literally a cardboard carton full of papers. And you named some of the names, right, of the authors of those papers of the time, the foundations of computer security and the pioneers who thought about these issues of computing. And I mean, just tremendous brain power that went into that. And here we are again, decades later, where this has gone from something the government and the researchers and the MITRE care about to, every citizen has incredible computing power, on their wrist and in their pocket. So a really different world. But, that focus on small, medium enterprises, that's something we share with you here at the Center for Internet Security. And, I'm sure many of the audience knows the numbers, right? Most of our economy is small businesses, most of our new job creation. So this is not a trivial problem. This is a foundational challenge for the nation. So give me a little bit about the origin story for Secure the Village, your nonprofit.
Yeah, that's right, because it so much fits right into that. I said, Kim Pease and I started this company, Citadel Information Group, in 2002, working with smaller businesses at that time. Mm-hmm. At that same time, I reconnected with the Information Systems Security Association. I had been a member 10 years earlier, had dropped out as my business evolved differently, but now I came back. Became president of the LA chapter, And it was that really seeing the expertise of the information security professional and matching that up against what we were seeing as we were growing our business, the realities of smaller businesses, oftentimes not having IT departments, let alone security people, having this real strong focus. I mean, small businesses, you got to pay the bills. You're interested in growing your business. It's all about, you know, revenue and profits and, you know, things like that that don't fit into the information security equation. And over the years, 3 or 4 years, as I was president of the LA chapter of ISSA, it just became more just obvious to me, if you will. And that's, we got the phrase, it takes a village to secure the village. You got to get everybody involved. Attorneys, I was discovering, we're talking to their clients about cybersecurity. So we're IT department, MSPs, but they weren't talking together. Those are separate conversations. So we started doing something about that with ISSA. Fast forward to 2014, it was time to leave the focus on what the ISSA professional is helping our internal community grow and do more explicit outreach. So I left and I formed Secure the Village with that idea to grow it. We didn't know how, we didn't know where, but to just, how do we get everybody involved? We had that is the fundamental question with no real clue yet beyond having meetings regularly, which we did, of how we were to make that happen. That took later.
One of the things that, you know, and we walked a lot of common ground in our careers, but never actually bumped into each other, I think, until relatively recently, Stan. And I remember, so I left government, you know, retired from the government in 2012, and basically spent my time in nonprofit space, you know, here at the Center for Internet Security ever since. And what struck me, right, having grown up in big government and, you know, been a sponsor of MITRE and worked with all those aerospace companies, you know, we had a particular perception of the national problem, the national issues and strategy and kind of the role of government. And I worked with nonprofits, including the Center for Internet Security, but never, until I became in it, never really understood what was going on and the power and the flexibility and the opportunity there. And what became clearer as the more complex society and technology got, we actually needed a stronger role, a more central and visible role for nonprofits, right, as an alternative mechanism for bringing people together, for finding common ground, for, you know, establishing things in a neutral way that often couldn't be done if the government was sending out the invitations or industry only. So how do we work that? So as I thought about that, and so several years later, I was pondering, what am I going to do here? Wow, nonprofits are amazing. Imagine if we just try to organize ourselves loosely, right, to loosely run in the same direction. And I'm talking this idea up and somebody says, you need to meet this guy, Stan. He sounds like you. And so somehow the connection was made and that brought us together, right? That is this common thread of there's something to be done here that can only be done as a nonprofit. And these are the origins, and you've been, you know, on our journey with us, Stan, with Nonprofit Cyber. Again, not a nonprofit of all nonprofits, but a voluntary, you know, way to coordinate, to make best use of each other's work, to find how do we bring together all this incredible talent, the volunteerism, all these things that, you know, are so richly found in our industry and take it to common ground. So Secure the Village was one of my inspiration points as I realized. Now, what you had was a really local, not, I wouldn't say small, given it's Los Angeles, but, you know, this idea of the local governments, local association, local chapter was, I think, the clear focus for you, which, you know, again, you, lots of people want to deal with the cosmic problem, but at the end of the day, it's our local businesses that we have to worry about. And so I think, you know, kudos to you and all the folks that you work with and Secure the Village around this hyper-local, you know, this is my neighbors. This is my councilman. This is my, you know, that is a really incredibly important part of this.
Well, and first, I appreciate that. But in all humility, I have to say, this wasn't something we sat down and thought about and said, oh, this is how we do this. This was something we woke up one day, looked around and said, where are we? Where can we have influence? So it was more that accidental. But But you're right, I think, about the key point, because as we began to put together our vision for Southern California, what it would take to make that happen, the idea of bringing the professional community together, it's already together in some sense. I mean, if the attorneys, at least in LA, the accountants, the bankers, the consultants, all meet together in networking groups of one kind or another, getting to know each other, because that's where commerce flows. If you're an accountant, you want to meet lawyers and you want to meet bankers and each the other. And there's even a role for the IT professional in there. And there's a big role, we believe, for that locus of business professionals to be, and add the MSPs to it, of course, the IT service providers and so on, to be the community through which we can help everybody improve their cybersecurity. Every small business has a banker. Most have, all but the very smallest will have an attorney and an accountant. Most will have them. And so if we can help them raise their game, if we can help the MSPs raise their game, even just being better able, I mean, not just even, but to be better able both to talk about it in a business relevant way and also to deliver. And that's where EIS, of course, comes in.
Yep. Everybody. No, wins. I think. Well, and one of the things that connects us, right? So I have the honor of running a grants program here from the Center for Internet Security in the name of our founder, Alan Paller. Mm-hmm. And so, congratulations again that you were one of our inaugural grantees under that program. So, if you could give the audience a little bit of background on the inspiration from Alan and then the grant and how it helped you organize the work out there.
Yeah, certainly. And unlike you, I only had the opportunity to meet Alan once. We had him as a keynote speaker at ISSA here in LA 1 year. And what Alan brought to that keynote speech was the first I had heard, really since I was in aerospace in the 80s, of any attempt to, here's the intellectual structure of what it is we're talking about that we're trying to do. And here's some data on how to best make it happen. The importance of patching, vulnerability management, updating that as the most number one thing you could do. Data, we had it. And you knew him. I mean, you must have corresponding stories about Alan.
Sure. No, I think what struck me as I got to know, we met through some, again, a bit of serendipity in my life that was obviously meant to be. But when I saw him speak to the challenges, right, to the national challenges, I was, just so impressed by his ability to span from the technical issues, right, and understanding of what the problem was, to this sort of larger emotional connection to this, to the importance to the problem for our economy, for our social lives. So he could span that. I mean, he was a legit big time technologist, right? He was a highly successful businessman, founder of the SANS Institute, but also as an incredible community leader. And philanthropic in nature, right? He was a generous giver back to the community, both directly through funding, but also indirectly through support and attention. And to be able to weave that story together, I was just so impressed. And it was catching me at the time when I was trying to bring more NSA work from behind the concertina wire out into the public, right? Just recognizing it wasn't. You know, it was a kind of the recognition that you had, right? We're all in this together. And so realizing that, and guess what? The DoD doesn't get better till everybody else gets better, right? We don't move things without commercial shippers. Nobody gets paid without commercial finance. We don't ship our goods without, we don't have uniforms without, commercial sources. And they're all, now, today we'd call it the supply chain, but it was really this the pressures to outsource more non-fighting, non-war fighting to other sources to gain economy. You know, these were all the kind of social economic forces at play here, but they also change, you know, it's always been a two-edged thing, right? We get economy, we get better costs, more diversity, but we also get more risks, more exposure, more attack surface. And so being able to kind of think all that through, I was just so impressed by Alan's ability to tell that story. Obviously we're at CIS, we are, one of his, a portion of the vision that he had. And so, you know, that's the reason for the grant, right? Once we lost Alan, you know, the board, you know, rightfully, appropriately decided that it was really important for us to find the kind of work that Alan would have treasured. And I always said that one of his great gifts was to find good people doing good work. And through exposure, maybe funding, connection to other things, his personal attention, to take that good work and bring it to the national stage and take the people and sort of elevate their view, their influence to the national stage. And so, that's the purpose of the grants program. So, you know, to hear the impact and, to give your nonprofit activity, you know, a way to focus, a way to scale, a way to, you know, create value through events and other things that would have been hard before, you know, that's exactly in the right spirit.
Yeah, that's great. But in some sense, Tony, what you've described in Alan to me is someone simultaneously able to truly see the big picture and articulate that to others as well, that communication skill, while also seeing the details down to the, you know, the nth degree, if you will, and being able to explain them. I mean, he was able to stand in front of a group of security people and help us better understand something we'd never, you know, we'd never seen before as well.
But there's I don't know if you know the name Jim Lewis. He's a figure in the D.C. area associated with the Center for Strategic and Inertial Studies. And he had a great anecdote about Alan. They were going to my brief Congress or something, and Jim is prepared. He's got all his talking points. He's ready. You know, Alan comes in with a 3x5 card or something. And he goes, and Jim goes, Alan just, he just wove this amazing story. Everyone was completely focused, you know, and left with the key points that he was trying to make. But he did it through this magnetism, this storytelling, right, this compelling narrative that established credibility, but also established this larger understanding of the problem that lawmakers were trying to solve and how these could be brought together. So let me ask you, just as another thing. So one of the things we did together during the last year was think about the term reasonableness and its role in cyber. And cyber with the intersection of regulatory, legislative, you know, public policy kind of tools. And so this is something I started to think about a few years ago. And, you know, again, deja vu all over again. I thought, well, who else has thought about this? And I did a quick web search and I go, oh, my goodness, my friend Stan has been thinking about this and, in fact, has run workshops on this topic for a few years. And so you know, we had the honor of working together on your prior one in the fall. But tell us, how did that come about? Because you'd been doing this for a couple of years before we talked about this. And so it seen something early and had taken action on it, right? It had created a forum to bring people together.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, it started early Secure the Village. I mean, part of the Secure the Village Foundation story includes reasonableness in it. 2015, actually it was 2016, I believe, when she republished the report. Then Attorney General Kamala Harris published a report on cybersecurity breaches here in California, which she makes the observation that reasonable security could be equated with CIS version 8. At that time, one of the things we were doing at Secure the Village was running a monthly webinar, these were live at that time, where the attendees were insurance people, security folks, insurance people, cyber attorneys, some bankers, a broader community looking at these issues. And we frankly felt, when you looked at small businesses, that Harris was wrong, that some of what was in version 8 was too much for the little bit. I'm not talking sole proprietors, but even bigger, smaller businesses. And so that got us off on that chase, if you will. That led to us writing, and it's what we felt, what's the minimum you need it to do to be able to have a claim that you're reasonable, your practices are reasonable, a floor, not a ceiling, as we very explicitly said, thinking about our smaller businesses. Along comes, and this now is the segue back to Alan Paller and the Paller Grant, the opportunity to do something really unique and different, which is what you wanted in the grant, you know, requirement, got us thinking, okay, so what can we do? What's within our wheelhouse, so to speak? And the idea of actually not just teaching smaller businesses and MSPs about cybersecurity, to take it further, to work with them in a team-based way to actually implement information security in their organization. They appoint a cyber leader, yada, yada, yada. And on the MSP side, when we started thinking about it, again, it's not that we started with the answer and figured out the question. We were lucky to find the right questions, frankly. But the idea, if you look at cybersecurity from the MSP's perspective, the thing that the MSP most cares about, like most small businesses, is how do I grow my revenues? So that got us thinking, all right, what can we do to help them grow their revenues in a cybersecurity context? And that led to our proposal to you, where we put together the concept of part of what we do is work with these MSPs to double their close rate, to get that seat at the table where they're the trusted advisor, not the, oh, you're just IT, we'll call you after we figure out what we're going to do and you'll make it happen.
Well, I think that, you know, what we were heading on a similar theme, Stan, which is, you know, we both grew up in the world of technology will save us, right? The brilliant minds will invent the, you know, the perfect operating system, the mathematically verifiable properties and all those good things. And we need great technology. It's not a question of we don't need that. But what was really missing was aligning that with the goals of public policy, right? A high confidence business environment where people believe that information is responsibly handled, coupled with public policy, but also incentives to sort of clarity of, you know, I often say, you know, all these small businesses, right? That's one reason I know it's a bit of a red flag here, but people talk about the cyber poverty line, which I try not to use because I don't like the term. Reason is because it implies if we just gave them money, then that you know, it's a flaw of lack of money, when in fact it's actually a model failure, much more fundamental, because the next dollar they get, whether it's from some magical pot or earn it, is not going to hire a cybersecurity professional. It's not going to happen, right? Because the incentive doesn't make any sense. But to align it with the risk decisions of reasonableness, you know, that is, for example, Ohio, you know, by the way, the California report in 2016 that you were reading, I was reading, and I'd never heard of this thing before. They didn't ask us about the reference to the controls, by the way. We had to track down the human being that did that. Wow, we never thought of it that way. You know, it was really very fascinating. And that allowed us to build some new connections. But Ohio for us has been the pioneer of aligning the good intention of the public policy, right? Provide a more confidence in the business environment with the incentive that if you invest in cybersecurity controls and have a reasonable program, you know, and it reasonable means looks like this, then you get an incentive, i.e. a safe harbor in the event of, you know, a breach. And that seems to be about the right place, right? To bring all that together. The incentive for the service provider, the good intentions of public policymakers, right, trying to provide confidence and to the citizens and, you know, in the environment that they're living in, but also better technology, you know, improvements that are not rocket science. Don't require, you know, MSPs are small businesses typically also, right, who have their own budget challenges, and so you want to make it attractive for everyone to get what they want out of this. I think that's why again, one of the things we try to do at CIS is connect these things. And, you know, again, we share that sort of broad thinking, right? You talked about the coalition you're trying to assemble. It was by design, not all people that speak geek. It's everybody, right? And it's, you're not going to make lawyers into geeksters and vice versa, but you are going to try to find the common ground. You know, what is it they're trying to achieve through their work, and how does technology make that better, riskier, more available, less available? And, you know, how do we bring the things that we know how to use risk management, you know, at large scale through things like incentives, right? Through things like the encouraging people to behave responsibly, or at least avoid bad behavior for fear of penalty. So Sam, what's next for you guys then at Secure the Village?
So good question. We have through all of this, I mean, we're coming out the other end of the Power Grant, getting that ability to deliver what we're calling reasonable security to a business. They can now implement these things. We know what the technical details are, the management details, but when they do, they can have a legitimate claim to say, okay, we're being reasonable here. They've thought through it, they've analyzed it, and so on. We have set ourselves the big, hairy, audacious goal of making Southern California the cyber safest region, metropolitan region of America, for smaller businesses, nonprofits, families, and individuals. That's a big, hairy audacious.
That's a big reach. But you know what? Alan would be smiling, right? Aim yeah, big.
Exactly. To do that takes four things. One is being able to deliver reasonable security. Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Alan, you know, for that. Second is this idea of building community and building it off of the existing economic ecosystem that we live here in Southern California, the MPs, the cyber attorneys, the insurance people, all of whom have the opportunity to work together, to network, to collaborate, to better grow their businesses, but also better secure the community. It's a win-win-win-win that way. Changing that's strategy two. Strategy three is changing the dialogue. Getting to what Malcolm Gladwell would call a tipping point, where the norm becomes reasonable cybersecurity, instead of right now the norm is, I'm not going to be under attack. I don't have anything they want. Nobody wants to hack me. I'm too little. We all know that's false, but we got to change that narrative. And fourth is building the pricing, delivering the value. To the MSPs particularly, who are growing their businesses through our program, to foundations, to cybersecurity vendors, to come play with us, partner with us financially, so that we have the revenues we need to really make this work in Southern California, not a little bit, but a whole lot that way. Those are strategic objectives.
All right. So we at the Center for Internet Security and also the team associated with the Alan Peller Grant Program are cheering for you and appreciate the big, hairy, audacious goal or whatever you called it. But all those elements, right, those are elements of our nation's need too. And so finding that example, that was part of Alan's mastery, as I said, find the good work. Elevate it through attention, through sponsorship, through making connections, to finance if needed. And let's see what we can learn from that and hold it up as an example for all.
And with that, we'll be right back after this quick break. Don't know how to meet the standard of reasonable cybersecurity? Well, you won't get there by putting a fancy lock on the server room door.
Right, Sean. CIS Secure Suite comes with integrated tools and resources for implementing a reasonable cyber defense program.
Now, let's not forget about testing. You can also use a CIS Secure Suite membership to evaluate the reasonableness of your cyber defenses using risk quantification.
And this will help you to comply with U.S. and state data privacy laws and show you've implemented the necessary security measures to avoid liability in the event of a data breach.
And now through April 30th, you can save up to 20% on a new membership using promo code RCD25.
So, want to make your cyber defense program reasonable?
Well, you need a CIS Secure Suite membership to build and test it.
Visit cisecurity.org/CIS secure-suite to learn more.
Thank you. And let's jump back into the episode.
Any last thought you want to leave the audience with, Stan, as long as I got you here and I've got one of one of my favorite veterans of this business in front of the mic?
Yeah, just I think as an illustration, Tony, of what you're talking about, through the relationship building and through the trust that engenders, we've been working with Cyber Wyoming, Laura Baker up there. Our MSP program is now available to them. And it's that village concept that we've got people that care. And when people care and we organize ourselves together, I mean, that's the beauty. We're in this for a reason. Cybercrime is not going away. Cyber espionage, all those things are not. And we're also at a time in history where more and more is responsibility is being pushed to the people. Government is saying, you know, we can't, or we're not going to do this, or whatever. So this need for us to work together, to collaborate together, is just enormous, if you will. And I'm just, you know, grateful we have the opportunity to do these kinds of things here in Southern California.
Yeah, thank you, Stan. That's wonderfully stated, right? The things we need to do in cyber, or a microcosm, big microcosm, of the behaviors that we need as a nation, of the nation that we aspire to be, you know, and are in whatever your foundation for behavior is, they're the right thing to do. And so, yeah, let's, anyway, again, we're so proud to be a part of your team and look forward to the next thing we can find to do together. And congratulations again, and appreciate all the work that you do. I know there's plenty more of us more for us to do together. So with that, we'll wrap up this episode. I do want to thank Stan again. Stan has been in this business quite a long time and made lots of great contributions. And, you know, between us, I'm not sure who's going to retire first, but we've done our best and I've had great careers and great opportunities to work with great people. So I know we share that. So for the audience, thanks again for joining us. We appreciate your time and attention and try to bring you something interesting and new every episode. Catch us in the usual ways. You subscribe to all the usual sources. With that, we'll wrap up this episode of Cybersecurity where you are, and we will catch you the next episode. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.